my feet. Just a man and his will to survive. It's the eye of the tiger, it's the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of a rival. And the last non-survivor stuck his prey in the night. And he's watching us all with the eye of the tiger.
You are listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. The following podcast contains adult language, adult situations, and spoilers for the movies discussed occur often. You've been warned. Now, take it away, Dr. Rausch.
They must be destroyed on sight.
Hello and welcome to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight, episode 308. And I'm your host, Lee. The moment I say where I'm from, they look at me like I'm a savage, Russell. And I am joined by my... Don't nod your head like that. I am joined by my co-hostess with the mostest, the lovely Lee. When you run, your behind moves around in an obscene way, Hardy. How you doing,
man? Geez, I better watch out then. Every time I go running, I might distract men.
You might. All joking aside, yes, you probably would. But, yeah.
That's a big but. Mm-hmm. It's not a big but. Yeah. It's a little big booty.
Little big booty, yeah. I agree with that.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Although... We ended up watching a pretty heavy movie. A lot heavier than both of us expected it to be. But
I don't know who's the asshole who picked this movie. But I hate them right now. Mm-hmm. And by them, I mean me.
Yeah,
I hate myself. I did not expect that at all.
I told you in our private chat that this movie almost made me cry a couple times. It was that depressing.
Oh my god!
Pretty harrowing stuff.
It punched you in the gut, like mm-hmm. hard.
You know, I think we're actually live on YouTube.
Are we?
We might be. It said there was someone viewing. Are we?
I can check. Oh hey.
Are we? Oh, we are. Live. Okay.
Hi, live people.
Well, shit. Okay.
We have one watching.
Yeah.
That's probably me.
I must have clicked the wrong thing, but
that's all good. We're here now.
Yeah, we're here now. But yeah, we're doing Persepolis from 2007, which is an animated feature. We haven't done a lot of animated films on the podcast, so it's always good to get back into that. And this is based on a graphic novel, and it's a very kind of intimate Iranian girls talk about growing up post the Iranian Revolution and well during it as well. So we will get into that. And as serious as like some of the parts of the movie are, like we're saying, were affecting us. Don't think it's all a downer. So it's not going to be us just talking about murder and rape for like 20, 30 minutes or whatever, you know, there's more to it than that. But before that, we can get to what we've watched in the last little while. So I'll throw over to you first, Lee.
Okay. So my friend Katie and I, I was looking for I was in like a really shitty mood last week, and I ended up hanging out with her, mm-hmm. and we were just like talking about wanting to find something to watch. And I'm like, I just want to watch something really trashy, like something really bad. And as we're going through like the stuff that she has, Dawson's Creek popped up. Never watched it as a kid.
Oh, really?
I think I saw like half an episode or part of an episode. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It was perfect. I don't know why or how or whatever, but every freaking show that I always watch, there's always that dirty, disgusting relationship that just pops up in the freaking thing. Anyways, mm-hmm. yes. It is hilarious because there's some moments that there's like such a pro like push for feminism, and then the next scene it's like backwards like 20 years.
Oh, I think pretty much all TV from that period was, oh yeah, there's kind of baby steps going on. It's like, oh, we'll do a feminist episode or whatever, but the rest of the time it's like, oh, we forgot about that next episode. That's totally gone again. Or in the same episode, we totally forgot about that story.
Yeah, just change the character entirely. Yeah. And just show like positive relationships as being truthfully really toxic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's it. I just made me laugh. that is what I'm watching right now.
All right. You're watching Dawson. You're watching, what was it? Katie Holmes was in that, right? Yeah. Katie Holmes and James Vanderbeek and
Joshua Jackson.
Holy shit.
Always looked older than he actually is. Like,
mm-hmm.
He's supposed to portray like a high school student. And I always think that he looks older than a high school student. Might just be me, but he just looks like he has like an older looking face. And not saying he's the actor himself. I mean, like, even when he was younger.
Well, I think they were all
styled his hair in a weird way that made him look older.
I think they were all fairly. I think they were kind of in the same boat as 90210, were they not? Where they were all like significantly older than what they're trying to portray. Like they're all supposed to be teenagers, right?
I think they were teenagers when they were doing this.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I'd have to check it out. I don't know. Because they were young. Like they're all young. They look all young. It's just how he styles himself and he does his hair. It just makes him look like he's older than he should be.
Yeah. Well, Joshua Jackson, you heard it here. Stop wearing your hair like you're some old fucking man. Although you're, you know, probably approaching old man status at this point anyway.
They're all in their 50s now.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. Okay. Dawson's Creek. That's a fucking series I never thought I'd hear about again. But
it was the first time watching it. That's the funny part.
So I've got two movies I'll mention. The first one I'm going to mention was for a podcast appearance that I did, and it should show up, I don't know, probably within the next week or so, maybe a couple weeks, on the Movie Melt podcast. And the movie we did was the Hong Kong kind of crime action film Run and Kill from 1993, directed by Billy Tang. And man, did this fuck me up, this movie, because it falls under the Category 3 designation, which was a Hong Kong basically rating for films, any films that were, you know, like restricted and shit. And usually they were pretty bad. Like they're like what an NC-17 or an X would be in North America, kind of thing. And it runs the gambit, right? Like there's so many films in this sort of, it's not a genre, but people kind of almost make it a genre in a way, because, oh, if you have a Category 3 film, then it's going to probably have like a bunch of rape in it and like child death and your general murder and mayhem and all this other shit. And this movie has some of that in it. But at the same time, this is like, I get the sense that this might be a good introduction to like a Category 3 film from Hong Kong, because it has just a little bit of everything in it, kind of. Like it's mostly a crime film. Like it starts out with this happy-go-lucky guy who catches his wife cheating on him and goes into a deep depression and goes drinking in the seedy part of town. And he runs into a gangster, and the gangster, like he doesn't really take out a hit on his wife, but he kind of insinuates it enough that the gangster's like, sure, I'll take your money, and then I'll go and kill your wife and her lover. And this ends up happening, and now he's got to, like, deal with that. Like, his entire life is just spiraled out of control. He doesn't even remember taking out the hit on his wife. There's, like, involvement from a rival gang, and more things spiral out of control. And it's like he's just the center of it. He keeps making the wrong moves, saying the wrong things, doing the wrong stuff. And more violence happens to the point where one of these gang members, this really psychotic, like monster of a person who's like a veteran of, I believe, Vietnam, the Vietnam War, if I'm not mistaken, he makes a personal vendetta against our protagonist. And it goes places. I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to like if anyone wants to actually watch this, I think there's a pretty good copy on YouTube, actually. although the subtitles are a little iffy, but the impact this film has when you watch it, like the tonal shifts it takes and some of the stuff that happens, is pretty hardcore shit. I was not expecting it. Let's put it that way.
Sounds hardcore.
It was. So Run and Kill, 1993. If you're looking, if you've never like dove into like a Hong Kong category 3 film, you feel like as weird as it sounds, and coming from someone who doesn't really have a lot of experience with those films, it feels like a good introduction, even though it's like got a lot of pretty nasty shit in it to watch. So, caution yourself. You know, it's an interesting watch. I'll give it that. I liked it quite a bit despite itself. The other one I'll mention, this is a Japanese film from 1975. It's called A Haunted Turkish Bathhouse. This is directed by Kazuhiko Yamaguchi, who actually did quite a bit of interesting stuff in the 70s. He did the sister Street Fighter films, which was the female spinoff of the Sonny Chiba Street Fighter films. And he even did a couple Sonny Chiba films as well. He did Karate Bullfighter. And yes, there's a point where a karate man, Sonny Chiba, fights a bull with karate.
Okay.
And Karate Bear Fighter. Again, yes, he fights a bear, quote unquote bear, a guy in a bear suit, but he fights one with karate. And Wolf Guy, where Sonny Chiba plays a sort of weird variation on a werewolf and takes out like Yakuza people and stuff like that. Haunted Turkish Bathhouse. Have you ever heard the term pink film before?
I can't say I have.
Okay, so it's a Japanese like sub-genre of film, basically, where it's like they'll say like pink film or pinky violence or something along those lines, and it usually involves girl gangs or just okay. women and stuff like that, and a lot of like lesbianism and violence and things of that nature. Usually
violence.
Yeah. usually female-centric kind of like action exploitation stuff is kind of what it is. Kind of like a more amped up version of what we watched a little while back, Switchblade Sisters. That kind of idea, but Japanese and like more hardcore, usually. So there's an element of that in this, but it's also it's a combination of that with this sort of time-honored tradition of Japanese horror films having like revenge plots that involve like a woman being wronged or killed or whatever, and then the revenge takes the form of like the woman coming back from the grave in the form of like a large supernatural cat creature almost. It's very weird, but it's kind of neat at the same time.
It sounds interesting.
Yeah, so it starts out as kind of a pinky violence film in a way, where it's like it involves a prostitute who is being used by her husband, who's lying to her. Her husband is basically like he's actually a gangster, and he lies to her about what he actually does, and he's been manipulating her, and he makes a deal with her pimp, basically the wife of his pimp, to like keep her employed and shit. And there's all this stuff that happens in like the first 30 minutes that's like this very convoluted plot, but it basically just sets up how they've wronged her so much and fucked her over so much that eventually she gets murdered, and then her sister comes to the prostitute den posing as a prostitute to enact revenge. But at the same time, it seems like her spirit has come back as well to enact revenge in the form of her pet cat, and it goes crazy pants by the end of it. It is insane, but it's a softcore horror film at the same time. Like, so it's got that noirish kind of plot thing going on at first, then it becomes a revenge thing, then it's like the supernatural stuff starts kicking in, and all through the entire thing there's all these softcore sex scenes and just like lots of boobies. Like the movie starts out a beautiful Japanese woman naked in the credits, like just on like a rotating platform, just like looking sexy. And it was like, okay, I know what this film is, but I quite enjoyed it despite, and no kidding, bunch of hot naked Japanese women was very nice to look at. But apart from that, it was just so fucking weird and audacious and went places I did not expect at all, especially when what I'd say like the final form of our vengeful spirit, the sort of appearance for that It's a little bit cheesy, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm fucking on board by then. And it just goes batshit bananas. It was a lot of fun.
This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-S.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah. So see, that's it. Haunted Turkish Bathhouse from 1975.
So. Oh, I was just thinking, because you mentioned something that made me think of it. Mm-hmm. But also finished, well, I started watching and finished the Fallout series.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what did you think of that overall?
The people who directed, wrote, like filmed everything, they paid so much attention to details in this series. It's as if they just took from the screen, like the game you play, and were like, here, insert here. Like it was just a like, copy and paste. Like, so many backgrounds, so many things. There were so many hints to so many different games. Mm-hmm. Like I've only played New Vegas and Fallout 4, but other people have told me that they've seen stuff from like other Fallouts as well.
Yes.
The big thing is when Lucy walks into the first house after she, or was it? And
she comes out of the vault. No, it
was the brother. I think it was the brother who like checks the other vault out. Either way, there was the little mobile, the little baby thing, the carriage and the little mobile thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was perfectly from Fallout 4. That was just literally, they just took it and placed it. Like, and the images of the houses being torn down and the sand inside and like all the trash. Perfect. Like it,
all the
perfect.
all the dead bodies around, like that's exactly what happens when you're like when you're just wandering in Fallout 3 and 4. Like, oh, you walk into a house, oh, there's a bunch of dead bodies, old skeletons that's rotted away.
Yeah, and they did some really heavy stuff in it without being graphic about it either.
Yeah.
Like at first when the atomic bomb went off and the girl had her thumb up and she's like, my thumb or your thumb?
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing that like just cut you down. That was like you just felt everything inside you just drop. Because that was just so well done in a way that you're thinking, yeah, this kid's going to die. Or... Mm-hmm. Most likely will die. And then the second thing they did that was really good was when Lucy was walking into the house and there was the booster seat or the whatever high chair and the kid was sitting in it, but it was a kid's skeleton.
Yeah.
And again, you don't see what happened. You just saw what they did at the beginning and now you see this and it's very much, holy crap, my mind just got blown. Like it just does it so well to take that intensity of like a child dying. Mm-hmm. But not showing you the kid die, but you know that you put it in your head that the kid got killed. Like,
yeah. And they spent their money on that series too, because like a lot of that, honestly, I'm sure there's like some CGI backgrounds and stuff that they employed, but a lot of sets. Like I was looking at pictures earlier tonight of the like that town that they go to. That sort of like it's kind of like
Is it Philly? Like the one that's kind of like
Philly. Yeah, that was it. Philly. Yeah. So that town Philly, like that's all built. Like that's a whole set kind of thing. It looked great. It looks great.
Visually stunning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm excited for season two.
They did such a good job developing the characters too. Because first of all, I love the comment that they made about the side quests. That just made me laugh hard. Like they hint at those on the occasion and I'm like, yep, that's so fucking true. Like the fourth one, you're supposed to find your son. And you're like, okay, cool. Let me do the whole quest first of every other thing. Yes, yeah, well, let's go worry about that son of mine that I was eagerly trying to find. And someone commented about how it's not accurate enough because Lucy's not picking up all the trash. And that made me laugh because I'm like, that's so true. Obvious, I get it. Like, you don't need to add that. I just mean it was funny.
Yeah, it's a funny little quip about it. But I mean, you know, there's game mechanics to Fallout where that, you know, you have to loot basically to do anything in the game. And that's just not the reality of an actual fictionalized version of it, a narrative version. Oh, absolutely.
But it's still just funny to think of. I did really like the Brotherhood and the massive bag that they have to carry.
That is funny. Like, probably actually a comment on what it would be like in reality if you picked up all the shit you were picking up in the game, right? Kind of thing.
Yeah. But yeah, the character development is just so beautifully done. Like, it's just, oh my God. I love how Lucy just starts off as like this innocent person who just doesn't understand how the real world works because she's lived in a world her whole life.
Well, and then she's very sheltered, right? But
but by the end, you see her where she starts become like a little bit jaded, and she starts become like, you can see the anger boiling, and you can see a whole shift in the personality.
But like, the funny thing is that, like, it's got that perfect thing Fallout's got going for it with the juxtaposition between, G. Willikers 1950-ish retro-futurism in America kind of ideal, where everyone talks like they're from Leave It to Beaver or whatever, you know, because they've been living in the vault for so long, and that's what American society was kind of like before everything collapsed and the war happened. But at the same time, you know, that first episode where she's getting married off or whatever, she's already down. She's down to fuck, and she knows, and she's, you know, she is dirty in the sack. Like, she's ready to go kind of thing. There's that underlying, like, oh, they're still human beings and they know a lot more and they're letting on. It's just more the culture is that 1950-ish bullshit. But like, everyone does it. Everyone says it in the vaults. It's just, but at the same time, they're all just like everybody else. Deep down kind of thing. They're like the Raiders deep down, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah it's just so interesting. So with Cooper as well, at first you think he's like the biggest asshole, but then you realize why he has such a hatred towards like the people in the vault. Like, it all starts to come together.
He's the realest one in there. He knows it's all bullshit. Like, yeah,
and just like at the end when they're trying to make society better for everybody, and then the Brotherhood of Steel just completely destroy it. Phenomenal.
Yeah, like, we could go down the rabbit hole. Like, I could start talking about the Brotherhood of Steel and their whole mission to preserve the pre-war America is actually a detriment to the society they should be building post-war, and that's why they destroyed that whole thing, and how they, you know, they made a mistake doing that. But
that's so sad.
Like, this is not the Fallout podcast.
No, but that last scene with Moldaver and Lucy's mom.
Yeah.
Oh my god. That's the last thing I want to say. Just
that. Yeah, that was some fucked up shit. When you sit there and consider, like, oh, that's Lucy's mom. Oh, that is fucked up. That is beyond fucked up. All right, we're gonna it's a very good series. Believe the hype. Like, don't go into it think it's like the most deepest fucking thing you're gonna run into. It's not hard science fiction. It's not deep, intense drama, but it's got everything you'd want for like a fun watch, especially if you're a fan of the series. Like, that's where I'd leave it at. So we're gonna take a quick break. Gonna play some music, podcast promo, and we're gonna come back and talk about Persepolis. And basically what we're telling you is
no more foreplay.
And when we come back,
we go a riding into town, a whopping and a whooping, ever living thing that moves within an inch of its life.
You ungodly warlock.
Howdy, folks. Got blood, violence, and freaks of nature.
You come to the right place. My name is Gary, and I'm your guide to Cinema Beef Podcast. Every episode, we not only deliver film reviews, we also dismantle some of your favorite and most hated films, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse.
Hey, you shut your face! If we want to hear you talk, I will shove my arm up your ass and work your mouth like a puppet!
All right, calm down. Every show, I hope to have a new co-host, podcasters, listeners alike. That's right, I'm talking to you people. I take all comers.
You're slapped.
That's not very nice. The only rules, well, let's ask the best cooler in the business.
All you have to do is follow three simple rules. One, never underestimate your opponent. Expect the unexpected. Two, take it outside. Never start anything inside the bar unless it's absolutely necessary. And three, be nice.
So join the insanity and please vent your frustrations. I'm available on TalkShoe, iTunes, and Stitcher Smart Radio. And remember, here at the Send Beef Podcast, if you got beef, I've got the grinder.
you ungodly warlock.
Persepolis 2007. We have a trailer. There's several versions of this. There is an English version out there, and that's where I pulled the trailer from. We watched the French language version, just so people know.
I live down the block.
In the middle of a revolution.
Down with the shot.
Margie, go to bed now.
Down.
Marjan is growing up.
Stevie Wonder.
Julio Iglesias.
Nail polish, lipstick.
Iron Maiden.
And about to embark.
What's with the punk shoes, huh? What's this on the back of your jacket?
On an amazing journey of discovery.
Right, you better get going.
No more crying. Europe is waiting.
You lived through a revolution and a war?
Well, yeah.
Wow.
So it's true what people say. Iranians have no manners whatsoever.
She told him she was French.
Now, in a strange new world, as her country changes forever, so will she. From Marjan Satrapi's best-selling graphic novels,
Marjan Toko, I love you,
comes the story of a lifetime.
In life, everyone always has a choice.
About finding the strength.
Never forget who you are.
And the courage to be true to yourself.
I've worked 20 years for this country.
The Birth of Venus is one of his most important works.
I repeat, stop running.
It's what you call immodest.
Well, then stop staring at my butt.
Dare me to take my veil off?
You wouldn't dare.
All right, Persepolis, there are two principal creative people behind this as far as writing and directing. We got Marjan Satrapi, who is the author of the graphic novel that this is based upon. Also worked on some other movies as a director and writer. I think this other one is also based on a comic she's done, Chicken with Plums, but it's like live action, I believe. Gang of Jotas, The Voices, which is a movie with Ryan Reynolds and evil talking pets that send him out to kill and shit, which sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. And she also did Radioactive, which was a biopic about Marie Curie. So yeah. Vincent Perrinaud, he is also known as Winslush, something along those lines. He's a comic book artist primarily, as well as a writer and director. He also worked on Chicken with Plums with Marjane Satrapi. And he's also worked on another movie called Hunted, which looks like to be a French horror movie of some sort. But yeah, primarily his stuff is comic books, so graphic novels and the like. So I can kind of see why they're working together on this to like kind of bring this sort of graphic novel to the big screen, trying to keep it honest. I do want to mention that this was nominated for Best Animated Feature in the 80th Academy Awards, and it was also nominated Best Foreign Language Film in the 65th Golden Globe Awards, tied the jury prize, and nominated for Palme d'Or in the Cannes Film Festival in 2007. And the, like, overall, very successful. It was nominated for 87 awards overall and won 29 and various other festivals. So this hit pretty big back in the day when it came out. Cast here, we got Shira Mastriani. I fucked that up. As Marjane. And she is in some other stuff out there, like Ready to Wear was the one that really jumped out at me. It's like, oh, I know that movie, Prêt-à-Porter or Ready to Wear. But she was just recently in a TV series I really enjoyed, which was Monsieur Spade, which was a hey, Sam Spade, the detective, retired in France kind of thing. It was pretty good. I liked it. We have Catherine Deneuve as Mother. She has 144 credits. She's been working since like 1957. Of course, there's one movie that Lady Lee and I both know that she was in, Repulsion. She was the star in that. We never reviewed it on the podcast, although we did talk about it on the podcast. It's like something we watched, I believe, back when you were in your film class. Yeah. She was also in March or Die, and then just a ton of other stuff. Again, this is one of those situations where it's like, oh, French cinema in a certain era is like a massive blind spot for me. So it's like, oh, I don't know any of these films she's in. But the interesting thing here, this is an actual real life mother and daughter team. They're the only ones who provide their voices for different languages for the dubbing of this film, you know, as opposed to, you know, with the American dub, there's a whole different cast for everybody else, basically. I'm not going to go into the details of the other filmographies for these people that I list, but Gabriel Lopes as Child Marjane, Daniel Daru as Grandmother, Simon Abkararian, holy shit, as Father, and Francois Gerosum as Uncle Anoush. And I have a synopsis here from Kenneth Chisholm on IMDb. It says, in 1970s Iran, Margie Satrapi watches events through her young eyes and her idealistic family of a long dream being fulfilled of the hated Shah's defeat in the Iranian Revolution of 1979. However, as Margie grows up, she witnesses firsthand how the new Iran, now ruled by Islamic fundamentalists, has become a repressive tyranny on its own. With Margie dangerously refusing to remain silent at this injustice, her parents send her abroad to Vienna to study for a better life. However, this change proves an equally difficult trial, with the young woman finding herself in a different culture loaded with abrasive characters and profound disappointments that deeply trouble her. Even when she returns home, Margie finds that both she and her homeland have changed too much, and that the young woman and her loving family must decide where she truly belongs. That's a good synopsis. I think that's actually really fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're going to get into it here. Lady Lee, what are your sort of initial thoughts? And also, why was this one of the ones that you gave me on your list of stuff to pick too?
Oh my God. Okay. So this is entirely random. What had happened? I went through like a really shitty time last week, just dealing with like personal shit. And you had asked me, because you mentioned that doing the podcast, been a while, and I got to pick the movie. So mm-hmm. I was looking for feminist movies. So mm-hmm. something cool to do about anything, like whether it was directed by a female, whether it was written by a female, whether it was about powerful females, just something. I needed something to just kind of like bring myself up, because I was feeling very shitty.
Yeah.
And going through the list, this one popped up that looked really interesting. And I read the description, and the description sounded interesting. I don't know why. Why? I shouldn't. Okay, it's a fucking amazing movie. there's some parts, like, it's hilarious. Like, there's parts that are so funny and parts that are so heavy. Anyways, that's how I ended up picking the movie. Before I go into a side track here, that's how I picked up the movie. It was literally just a looking for something that was very, like, female forward.
Mm-hmm.
You
certainly picked well there, that's for sure.
I was super proud of my choice because I like to pick something that you haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. That is something that's like the weirdness of the things that you enjoy. Because I know you appreciate the kind of alternative movies in general. So to have this one, I think this is like the second animated movie we watched together. Because I think I got you to watch one of them for
class. Yeah, and we did, I can't
even think. Oh, yeah, the one that we did with Vaughn.
Yeah, with Vaughn and Gary we had on. I'm blanking on it, but...
The one that showed the kind of, like, the history of...
honestly, that one's kind of a lot like this one in some ways, too. Because that one also has an epic, hey, here's tracking the lives of people through extremely, you know, a lot of change through the decades kind of thing.
That was just showing, like, generational trauma. Like, that was a really good example of that. Like, just showing, like, how it finally came to be that eventually they broke through. This was just showing a girl grow up. But, like, same idea. Just showing, like, the tragedies around them. But, yeah, that reason I picked it. I'm really happy. I joke about, like, why I picked this movie. And I commented, like, I was messaging you as I was watching it. Because... yeah, some of the parts are so heavy to watch. Like, the first one that hit really hard, I'm trying to think. The grandfather scene where the grandfather gets arrested again, and this time they know he's not getting out. Mm-hmm. And he's only allowed one visitor, so he asked for his granddaughter to come visit. And he made the duck.
Ducks. Not grandfather, though. I'll correct you there. It's
the uncle.
Uncle Anoush, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that's my bad. It's the uncle. Mm-hmm. But you hear his story. He talks about being this person who's just like fighting for good. Mm-hmm. And then that last scene, like when he gets arrested the second time and they just know he's not getting out this time.
Yeah.
Oh, that hit heavy. Then another scene was when they talked about the girl that they weren't allowed to execute unless she was not a virgin. So the guard married her, had sex with her, and killed her.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. And how they did it. Like, this is animated.
Yeah.
So the animation, like, sometimes when it comes to the funny parts, they're fucking hilarious. But then to take, like, an animation and make it so goddamn dark at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was heavy. That was, like, the heaviest one for me.
Yeah, it's a very minimalist animation style. Like, we start out in color, and then, like, the most of it's flashback, so it's black and white. And it's very stylized. It matches the graphic novel pretty much perfectly. Like, I checked out the graphic novel online, and it's like, yes, this is the animated version of that. Perfect. Sometimes really clear, strong, solid lines, right? Just like two color monochrome, basically. They actually draw this stuff. Like, none of this is like computer animated or anything like that. Like, this is all them drawing this shit. It's all done with felt fucking markers, felt tip markers and shit like that. But there's scenes where it looks like incredibly detailed, like, especially like the backdrops and stuff look like incredibly detailed charcoal drawings, almost, especially during like nighttime scenes and stuff, where it's like all of a sudden the background is totally dark, and then there's these like white outlines of trees and stuff like that, and that's a very, like, you know, charcoal drawing kind of thing to do, where your lines are dictated by the actual white space on your charcoal drawing, as opposed to, you know. But yeah, and also like the animation, and I have to ask you this because you're the Bob's Burger expert in this podcast, but from what I've seen of Bob's Burgers, I kind of got the animation is a little bit on that level kind of thing, where it's kind of simple, but it does flow fairly well. And also like Batman the Animated Series, and I was getting more of that with just the darker scenes and stuff like that, and the silhouette scenes. It felt very very much like that to me. I don't know if there's like another cartoon you know of that like kind of fits this style better, but that's what I was thinking of anyway when I was watching it.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
Yeah,
I would agree. I'm trying to think of like other things, but what you mentioned it perfectly. It's very simplistic, but it's done so effectively that it's fucking brilliantly done. Again, like I always say, so every time I watch an animated movie, I always have this difficulty because it can get ridiculous pretty quickly, or it can look stupid, or it could take away the feel. Like it just takes away the seriousness of it. But there's three of them now that have completely disproven me, like just tossed it in my face and was like, yeah, watch this, Lee. So yeah, that's, oh my God. There's some scenes too. Like there wasn't anything to it. It was just how the voice actors portrayed the voice and the drawings that they did. Mm-hmm. And it just, I just can't. It was so hard. Some of the scenes were just so hard to watch. Okay, I'm going to talk about some funny things though, because I got into like some serious notes. But this is what I mean about this movie. It goes from like fucking dark as shit, where you're ready to like bawl your eyes out, to like you want to start laughing your ass off. The scenes of Margie when she's a kid and she's being like sweet and innocent, but realistically she's like being a badass.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one with the nuns that catch her when she's buying the Iron Maiden cassette.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's just her being like, oh no, pity me. I'm so sorry. I'm having a troubled home. Oh no. And the animation is just so good. And then her face afterwards where she's like all in tears and she just wipes off tears like, and then she goes home with the Iron Maiden.
Yeah. I like that she's out there, that one scene where she got her Punk's Not Dead jacket.
Yes.
And she's wearing sneakers, and then like two like religious fundamentalist ladies catch her, right? Yeah,
that's the scene I was talking about, because she had the Iron Maiden set on her.
But they see her shoes first, right? They're like, yeah. Why are you wearing those punk shoes? And she's like, they're not punk shoes. I'm on like my
girls' basketball
team or whatever. I need them. They're not punk shoes. Hey, then what about this? And turns around, Punk's Not Dead on the back of her thing, and she's like, oh, she's busted. You know, yeah. But that's where
she's so sorry.
Yeah, but you know, that's an interesting through line too in the story, where you know she earlier on she learns to lie and scam her way out of trouble, right? And it eventually catches up with her to the point where she does something like that disappoints her grandmother, who is like the biggest parental figure in her life is her grandmother. Like she's more connected to her grandmother than her parents, even though, like, don't get me wrong, like, It's obviously presented that her parents are very, very well-to-do, like liberal-thinking, progressive Iranians in the 1970s, and they love their daughter dearly. But she has like that special connection with her grandmother, who, you know, her grandmother's like no bullshit at all. Like she's just like, she tells everything as it is, and doesn't lie to her at all. Doesn't like try to smooth things over. It's like, yeah, no, you're going to run into shitty people and just remember they're stupid and you're better than they are. And you just need to be you and don't lie and don't be anything that you're not. And it's really, really good. Like I was taken aback by like how deep that whole thing was. It was very, very good.
Is it the lavender that she puts in her bra?
She puts
jasmine flowers in her bra. Every time they describe that scene, it was so beautiful and kind of like adorable at the same time. Because just how they talk, like they show the grandma, again, it's animated. You're seeing grandma take off her bra and it's got all the old wrinkles and stuff. But then they have the flower petals that fell out. Like, oh, that's so beautiful. And then the girl's like, how are your tits so perky?
It's just like I bathe them in ice water every morning or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Why do you smell so good? I shove flowers in my bra.
Yeah.
I just that was so cute. And then speaking of like other really cute funny parts, when she starts to grow older and like hits puberty and talks about the transformation.
I feel like this is a probably pretty spot on visualization of like what a lot of young girls go through when they hit puberty, because it's just like and this is where like goofy animation really works when you inject that into your animated feature, where now it's more surreal and it's like more her mental, like her internal visualization of what she feels she looks like, not what she actually looks like, kind of thing. And I thought it was really well done. Because, you know, first this happened to me, and then my nose got big, and then my butt came out and bounced off my nose or whatever the fuck it was. And all the time on screen, you're watching her body, like, to go through these transformations where her nose gets super big and, like, fucking weighs her down and she falls on her face. And then her butt comes out and it fucking brings her back. And
the boobs and then the,
mm-hmm. Then she gets in. You know, if you look at pictures of the real woman, like, she's a very lovely looking Iranian woman, and she's got the mole or beauty mark or whatever on her nose and everything, and yeah,
it's so good. And then the boyfriend that cheats on her. How, like, oh, yeah. He's so attractive, and then he turns into this, like, disgusting human.
I feel like that's very true as well. Yeah, you start thinking the worst of these people. It's like, how was I fooled by this ugly troll, you know, who was just drooling? He had no teeth, and he sucked my face in the car like a monster that first night we kissed. And how was I fooled by this? You know, I was scammed. It's like, yeah, pretty spot on, I think.
Yeah, and then when she gets out of depression. That's a song that that was played at the beginning.
Yeah.
She gets out of depression and she's singing that song in that terrible way, but it shows so much power behind her. Like, you want to laugh and you're just so stoked for her at the same time.
She's singing Eye of the Tiger as a real person would sing it who can't sing. And it's also English is not their, you know, English is not their, not even their second language. So, you know, they're singing in broken English, Eye of the Tiger, and they don't have a singing voice. And it's wonderful because it's an empowerment moment, right?
Yeah, like, they have the animation that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that part made me cry, but, like, happy tears. They did a really good job at showing depression as well. Like, anybody who has ever dealt with depression, they always explain it the same way. They always talk about, like, this darkness around them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter, like, what activities are being offered or what everyone else is, like, trying to do to get you out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just darkness. Like, that's all it is. It's you mentally feel like your brain just can't be happy. And mm-hmm. they did a beautiful visual of this. Like, it was so dark and so spot on at the same time. And in this case too, oh fuck. Okay. So this is, like, things women go through. Mm-hmm. And I'm only learning more about it. We are now 2024 and they're just using blood to test period products now. Mm-hmm. Like, in recent years.
Yeah.
We have a period.
Mm-hmm.
We use period products and they were testing it on shit that wasn't the same as period blood.
That's because period blood's icky, Lady Lee.
It's just... Anyways, this is one thing. So they showed the scene where the psychiatrist was just doodling and whatever. This is it. This is literally it. This is, like, years and years and years of women. Doesn't matter what fucking country you come from. Every time a woman complains, it's always like, oh, they're just fucking hysterical. They're emotional. Whatever.
Hysteria. Blah, blah, blah.
Here, give them medication and just, like, move on. I'm... nothing against medication. I'm on medication to help me for, like, my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never be against, because I can know that medication can definitely help. But they blindly just pass on medication instead of trying to, like, really help. Because the thing is, when it comes to mental health, anything that you do, it has to be, like, it's both. Like, for me, I'm working with my medication and I'm working on me as well at the same time. Because I can't just expect the medication to heal me. Like, it's just something that helps, like, with the chemicals in your brain to, like, help you, assist you, but, like, they just treat it as, like, cool, yeah, shut the fuck up and take these pills.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm going to get a little bit on a tangent, but not really. but this is literally the truth. This is not just Iran. This is like, North America that does this, too. This is what happens today. This is shit that women are fighting for. Getting your IUD inserted. For the longest time, they're like, oh, it's just going to be a little bit of pressure. And all these girls are in so much fucking pain when they're getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's being like, oh, yeah, they're supposed to actually put, like, this numbing agent. They're supposed to do this. Okay, and then menopause. There's actual help for menopause. There's ways to help relieve menopause and the side effects of menopause. There's, mm-hmm. like, actual... there's no research or fucking funding being put into it because it's just like, oh, whatever. It's just like a fucking woman going crazy because of her emotions and blah, 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 and hormones. Yeah. I'm sorry that I went on this one, but like, as someone who thought like was basically feeling like the whole time as a female, there's been this progression. And I find out that there's tons of medical issues that are me now has to worry about for my future and had to worry about in my past. Like, mm-hmm. thank fucking God I never dealt with cramps growing up because I never realized how bad they were until, like, I think I was 32 or 33 when I experienced my first fucking cramp. And it was the worst thing ever. I was a baby. I was crying to my boyfriend at the time, trying to get him anything that was warm to relieve the pain. And women just forced to go into work on a daily basis with pain that's so, like, it's literally debilitating. Like, it's so goddamn painful.
Yeah.
And this is me now. Like, this mm-hmm. is, and this, like, oh my God. Like, it's so infuriating. Like, the scenes that they show you about the how women are just so disrespected, it's like we're fighting to make it better and we've been fighting for years and the shit that's going on, it just tears me apart that like there's women who leave their countries to come for better pastures and they have assholes on the other side who are fighting to like bring back what they just left, like
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's one of the strings of this, right, where she goes to France, she gets a education. She integrates somewhat into French society, but she still runs into like bigotry and racism and all kinds of other problems. Like it's not necessarily the entire wonderful freedom that she thought it was going to be. Right. She still runs into, there's still like, you know, there's still shitty religious shit. Like she's at that nun's convent for a little while or whatever. Right.
Yep.
Where she runs into the same kind of fucking person that those old fundamentalist ladies were like in Iran. So, you know, she's torn between who she is and how disappointing like this new experience has been for her in so many ways, right? But she can't really go back. Like, she goes back to Iran, but she learns really quick that she really can't go back. Like, it's not a country she can go back.
There's a part that you literally brought it up perfectly mm-hmm. for this, but the time when the mother, after the girl got married, the yeah. mother was crying in the washroom and she's like, this is not the life I wanted for you. Like, you need to get out. Like, you need to get an yeah. education. I want you to be culture. I want you to be everything. That's exactly what my mom told me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my mom obviously like didn't have to flee or anything like that. And I didn't have to like leave the country, but my mom growing up was denied an education. My mom was basically like, you're the female, you're the oldest female, you're basically training to become your mother. Like, that's it. Like, you're gonna be taking care of the household. So you're taking care of everybody in the fucking family, even though you're a child. Education's frowned upon. You're not gonna go get an education after whatever. And mm-hmm. I remember my mom, even when I was younger, my mom was like, you're not going to have a relationship until you get an education, until you get a career. It's like, I don't want you starting a family. I don't want you getting married until you have a career. Mm-hmm. That was just embedded in my brain as a child. So I found that line. I found that just part was extremely powerful. Like, I know there's a lot of women who fought for their children for better lives. And it even is like what my mom dealt with. Like, just something simple as like my own mom in the situation that she was dealt with. And then you see this mother who sees how her daughter can't blossom in this country. And she mm-hmm. wants her to be like herself. She wants to be true to herself. And her mom's even like, what the fuck are you doing? Don't get married. Get the fuck out.
These two generations of women in her life that, you know, are like guideposts.
Grandmother's like such a tough bitch and I love it.
Yeah. They're like guideposts for her. Like, they come from a version of Iran that was not nearly as bad as it is now. Like, so this movie does a really good job of giving us a little rundown of the history, and I love the way it's done too, where so it's still in the same animation style, it's still visually totally the same, but when they're relating the brief history of like how we got to where we are now, it's almost like a kid's puppet show, the way it's animated, like their arms flop around and stuff like that, like they're like puppets in a puppet play. But like, basically You know, and I don't know all the details, but I do kind of like know like the way the reason Iran is the way it is these days. So before the Iranian Revolution, they had an elected parliament. They did have a monarchy, but the monarchy was kind of like pretty much powerless. Like it was kind of like how the British monarchy is these days in England. Probably not exactly 100% the same, but it was kind of like that. Iran was really progressing. Like it's actually one of the more quicker evolving progressive nations in the world back in the day. It was like very much modernizing. And the problem is that during the period this was happening was dead in the massive peak of the Cold War, basically, mm-hmm. where it was stuck between two powers, like all the Western powers and Russia. And so both of those powers had interests in using Iran as a sort of a chessboard pawn. The British and the U.S., and this was released later on and like actually released documents from the CIA and stuff. They actively funded the coup that put the Shah of Iran back in power and like in total power, where before he was just kind of a nominal like figurehead leader. They actually actively helped him overthrow the parliament and put the monarchy in charge of the country. And with that came a ton of oppression. Like it became a much more authoritarian country. At the same time, there is like also, there was a lot of modernization that came under the Shah as well. Like, and that's why at the beginning of the film, it seems like things aren't too bad. Margie at first likes the Shah as an innocent child who's naive to all this because she's growing up in an actually pretty decent version of Iran. Even mm-hmm. though it is ostensibly under authoritarian rule. But essentially what happens is religious fundamentalists start a revolution and take over and push the Shah out, because there was all this like pushback against like national, like other nations interfering in Iran. There's a sentiment of like Western powers and such trying to control things. And they pushed back against that. And that's why the revolution kind of happened and why that Islamic fundamentalist party took over under Ayatollah Khomeini. And then, of course, we see as Margie gets a little bit older, how oppressive things become and how she has to start wearing a veil. And the horrors of the fact that as soon as that happened, the revolution purged like so much of like the standing military of Iran that they were pretty much defenseless to a certain degree. And that was immediately like a tip off for Saddam Hussein to be like, hey, we're Iraq. We got lots of military, lots of power. Let's just walk into Iran and take it over, basically. And that's what they tried to do. And that's why the war happened. And that went on for quite a while. And then we see Margie like seeing the horrors of war. And then there's that one great scene where she comes back to like her neighborhood after it's bombed. And it basically becomes the like as her face, she puts her hands to her face and like, and it becomes the scream, the Edvard Munch scream painting, that famous painting. Like as her face zooms out, like pans out, it becomes more and more the scream. And it's like, oh, that's really well done.
So but, it's okay. The other scene too, because like, you're talking about the war and like, they even talk about how so many of them died. So many people mm-hmm. died, and they have that trench, that hole where all the soldiers just jump into it.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck me, that was powerful, because it was just like it was such a useless war, and then like you just see all the soldiers just like jumping into their deaths into this pit.
Oh yeah, they just chewed people up. Like Iran during that period when they went to war with Iraq, they were, and we see this in the film as well. They were actively just recruiting like young teenage boys into as soldiers because they had no. Like they were losing so many of their generation of soldiers, like the previous generation, like almost all of them were either killed in the war or killed as political dissidents against the Islamic fundamentalist government. So they just wiped so many people out. And I mean, her uncle, Anoush or whatever his name is, people like him got the worst of it because he was an active communist, and the Communist Party actually took the majority of the blame out of all the different groups that were vying for power at the time before the revolution happened. So they purged the communists like extra hard because they were the most progressive, like more liberal minded of the different factions, basically, at that point.
All I could think of was like the scene. It was right at the beginning when the kids were chasing the one kid on the bicycle because his dad was a killer.
Yeah.
And the girl had a talk with God and was like, you just need to forgive him because he's not the one who did it. And she goes up and he's like, I forgive you. He was a communist. That's why they were communists. They deserve to die. I could think of was like the movie that we watched, the documentary we watched.
Yes, Act of Killing.
Yeah. Oh, very much. Just like, my head, I was like,
very much same vibes, very much same kind of situation, really.
Oh, my fuck.
Yeah.
Why do we do this to ourselves? Why are we thinking such heavy goddamn movies?
I'll say this, like this film, as dark as it gets at points, it's a much easier watch than Act of Killing, because Act of Killing like just bears it out so nakedly in front of you what these people did. And you meet the actual people who did these things, where this you get to be a bit more detached, right?
Yes.
And also it has a much more, I wouldn't say upbeat ending, but it's a much more positive ending, right?
Yeah, it is.
Because she escaped. Yeah, because she escaped and she did well for herself. Like she made this movie. Like this is her succeeding in life, making this movie to tell her story.
Okay. What blew my mind was when they described, or they said, the mother said, you're 21 and you're getting married. I had to stop for a second and be like, she's 21. Like everything that happened to her, everything that was going on, everything that she experienced. And then you realize this girl's only 21.
Yeah.
Like that's everything. Fuck me. Like I don't even understand because they even showed you like the dates and stuff, so it could have made sense in my brain, but it still didn't just because of everything that she had to deal with. I'm all over the place. I apologize.
That's all right. There's a lot like in this. Yeah. I was expecting we're going to jump.
So there's a scene when she's like comes into her body and she's starting to like boys, and then she has the first crush on this first boy. And she finds out he's gay.
Yeah.
Okay. This has happened to me. I wasn't dating the person, but this has happened to me. So I have a friend. I'm really close to this one friend, and we laugh about this every time. Cause I remember one time I went back to his place, we're having drinks, and like there was me, there was another guy, and there was my friend. And the guy was gay. And my buddy was like saying that he was bi. And then there's me who's just horny. And anyways, I made out with him. And I think the next day he's like, Lee, you made me realize that I'm gay and not bi. Like, fuck sakes. Obviously, I'm stoked for the person because like.
Yeah, but at the same time, did you have the same smile Marge he had on her in the film? Yeah. Where it's like, oh, great.
Yeah. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Just turn someone gay. Oh, I didn't like it. It's just funny. Obviously, like I'm stoked for the friend, and when you find out, you're just like, oh, yay! Because you don't want to be mad at them. Like you can't be mad at them. No, but part of you is mad at them.
Yeah, but you know. Yeah, and you're right. She goes through a lot in like a scant, not even like 10 years of time almost. She goes through so much even before she hits 20 that it's just like crazy.
There's a scene, a heavy scene, where she's on the bench and she's coughing up blood.
Yeah, she's got bronchitis and she's dying of like pneumonia or something, right? Like,
yeah.
And then this is part of she encounters racism and bigotry in France, even though, you know, she's integrated so much into society. She's still an other, ostensibly, to a certain degree, where she's kicked out of the apartment. Well, she basically runs into the apartment because the crazy lady who's letting her the room accuses her of stealing her brooch or whatever. And she's like, well, fuck this, I'm leaving. And then she's living on a bench and I guess she lived homeless for a little bit, and she got really sick, Yeah.
So it starts off with, she was supposed to go to her mom's friend's place, which turns out they just pushed her out. They rejected her right off the bat. They're like, yeah, fuck this shit. Which is so sad because this girl's young, leaving a country. And then they're like, yeah, we found you a place at a nunnery. Like an Iranian girl going to a nunnery in France.
And they were just giving her shit for eating spaghetti out of a pot.
Yeah. And they didn't care for her. They were very disrespectful to her the whole time, which fuck that shit in general.
Yeah, no, fuck. Like I love her response. It's like, you know, they're like, you savage, like eating out of a pot. It's like, oh, I heard all nuns were fucking prostitutes. So is that true?
Before they came nuns.
Yeah. So fuck you bitches.
Yeah. Nuns are awful.
Yeah.
But anyways, I could go on another rant. So that's not, it did remind me of, like what happened in Canada with the whole trying to help.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're not going to go into that because that's a whole different thing. But that scene just reminded me of it. Just like that when they said she was a savage.
Yeah. Like, very much the same thing. It happens everywhere. It's and hey, the universal constant is the Catholic Church and religion in general. Fancy that.
Okay. Anyways, we're going to move on. Finds her place. And she even says, like, this person's fucked up. Like, she's a crazy lady. I hated her. And this girl's really young and she leaves, doesn't know anybody, doesn't really have friends. I guess, yeah, she said that she moved like from place to place to place to place for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like when you talk about all the places that she's lived, I thought like for whatever reason she was older. Because there's like, right. I lived with like eight homosexuals. I lived like with this area. I lived here. And I'm like, afterwards, when she said she's 21, I was like, how old was she when all this stuff happening? Yeah, so it blew my mind. But then, the scene where
she's lived in like the hospital. She lived like three or four lifetimes worth of like life in like her 20s alone. Like, it's crazy.
In her teens. It wasn't even her 20s. Yeah. It was her teens. Like, not in high. Like, she was high school. I literally thought it was college or university or something. No, it was fucking high school. And I should have known this. It's just, I guess, because her life was so like crazy with everything she was going through that, I couldn't wrap my head around it. Like, I just, what? So there was the scene at the hospital, and she asked for the phone call. So she's like, hey, can I call my parents? And I guess it's been 2 months since she was able to contact. So she's probably on the streets for about 2 months, give or take.
Yeah.
And she said, can I come home now? And the dad's like, yes. It's like, can you do me a favor? Can you not ask me any questions? Oh, my whole fucking, my heart. Oh my God. Could not handle that. That was
rough.
Because you knew, like, there, she was so ashamed of everything that happened. She was so ashamed. Like, we're getting what she wants to share. I guarantee you, there's probably a lot worse that happened. Like,
oh yeah, there's definitely stuff that was left out of this.
Yeah, intentionally. Sure. Like, this is already heavy, and I can probably assume because that's the thing. Like, she was so young, and she had no guidance. The poor thing. And had to like live life, and then now has that feeling of failure attached to like where she's trying to go, where she was supposed to be able to be a free female, free woman, go back to a country that's like oppressing her, where she is, like she finds more comfort, but then realizes that like,
she comes back to an Iran that is post Ayatollah Khomeini, post Iran-Iraq war. So it's a little bit better. But at the same time, it's still not great. It's still like, yes, women can go to college and shit, but there's this whole modesty thing that's still in place. Yeah.
Where they like cover up the...
And like, you know, at college, there's debates like the guys in college, like we want the women to be more modest and wear even longer skirts and veils and shit like that or whatever. And you see that, you know, the repression is still there.
The art. It's literally an art class, and they're covering up all the nudity.
They cover up the Venus de Milo. Yeah, they cover that up.
They covered up. Just put
When they do the sketch, she's in like a burqa or whatever, Habib or whatever the fuck those things are called. You know, like she's the model is like you basically just see her face and that's it. And And she knows this is bullshit and is like, yeah, this is where, you know, it's the turning point where she realizes Iran's not going to get better in my lifetime.
It's so this was a little bit before. I'm going to jump back for a second. So when you realize, like, I think she started to realize, like, it was bad. Like, it was when she was got caught with a full face of makeup on.
Right.
And she decided to play the innocent, accused someone of insulting her.
Yeah.
And pointed to a stranger, an innocent person who got right. arrested. And she was laughing. And they didn't clue in the severity till her grandmother was like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah, because the guy gets hauled off to jail, and like he's probably going
to
be.
You don't even know what happens to him.
Yeah, and like that's something that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life. Like you sent someone to jail for no reason, and fucking that, and that's that through line that I was talking about, where, you know, early on she would like scheme and lie and stuff to get out of trouble. And then she does it as an adult, and then she tells her grandmother, like, "Oh, this is what I did," and she's really proud of it, and like thinks it's funny. And her grandmother's like horrified, like, "That's not how I taught you to be. That's not the self-respect I taught you to have, and the respect to have for other people. That you lied and got someone in trouble and in serious trouble. You're telling me this after my husband was fucking put in prison for fighting for the freedoms that you nominally have at this point." And you're right, that's also a major turning point. Like she realized, that's another part of like her realizing that she cannot be in Iran anymore.
I think that was a start. And then when she goes to school, and then the art's being censored, the models being covered, so she's being told she has to be more modest. She's running for class because she's going to be late, and they pull her over, and they're like, "Your butt's jiggling."
Yeah, your butt's jiggling.
Don't look at my fucking ass.
Yeah, it's hard to watch those scenes. It really is. It's horrifying.
Yeah, then she gets married, or no, she has a boyfriend who holds his hand in the car and gets pulled over, arrested, questioned, and charged. Yeah. So either she gets whipped or she pays a fine for holding a guy's hand. And that's the dad comes in and says, "I was 14 holding your mom's hand down the streets in this country." And just to like give her, like both the parents are like, "Get the fuck out of here. Please get the fuck out of here."
That's the thing. The parents know. They've seen Iran at its best, and they've seen it at its worst. And they see the version of Iran that's there now, where it's not necessarily the crazy pants Islamic like kill people on the streets kind of openly thing, but it's become this like modesty police state, where and especially where it comes to imposing that on women, especially.
So she gets married out of the sake of now she won't get in trouble for like having a boyfriend,
right?
And realizes that she's not in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes out to a party, a forbidden party, and god fucking damn it, that scene ever fucking crushed my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. And like this, okay, this is what's so amazing about this movie. That scene, you don't need to know, like, you know what happens. And they didn't show anything. They didn't show him I guess I should give more detail because I'm like,
basically what happens is they're having an illegal party.
Or you can give the details.
Yes, the modesty police, I'm sorry, the modesty police, you know, they raid the place. They get a forewarning, so they're able to like run, basically. And there's and she's part of like the group that's like being chased on the top of, is she?
No, she wasn't. So they see them coming. So the women stay in the apartment and dump all the booze. The men hide in the staircase. And so the police come up the stairs, the police go into the apartment and see all the women there, and they can smell that there was booze, but there's none there. It's just the cups smell like booze, and they hear something in the stairway. So then they start chasing them. In the stairs, because then the guys see that the cops are in the stairwell, and the guys start running away. So they're trying to like get away, and the cops are just behind them. They get to the roof, and they're trying to get to the next building. So there's a big gap. So they decide to take the leap. They decide to jump. Well, the one guy who is trailing behind, he hesitates and doesn't make the jump. Then he realizes the cops are still after him. So he just makes a run. But because he like lost momentum, essentially, he makes a jump. But then they don't show you anything. They just show you doing the jump and that's it.
Yeah.
And you just see like the hand, and then you know like there's that like he realized.
Well, they do the shot where he takes the jump and he go and you see him go down.
He's just, like reaching.
But you don't know what happens. But then like it basically pulls out and gives you the same shot but from a distance. And you can see where like everything's aligned and like how much of a gap's between the buildings that you know he didn't make it, because there's a position of where the moon is and stuff like that, where it's just like you can kind of like figure out.
Yeah, and you see the cops, they stop at the edge of the building and they like kind of look down and then like look at each other and they walk away. And you don't, the next scene is literally her coming back to the apartment with her husband and him being all worried because it's like, hey, I didn't know where you were. And she just says, oh, this person died. By the way, I want a divorce.
Yeah. Oh, and then, and it's, you know, I don't know if we want to go much more into this, but I just feel like, you know, the thing I took away from it, there's that old saying, you can't go home again. And I've never really like believed that 100%, but you can't always go home again, but you can take like the best parts of it with you somewhere else. And I think that's kind of, for me, that was like the big message that came out of this, where she decides she's just the whole thing, like the whole wraparound of this is that she's in the airport and she's thinking about going back to Iran and she hesitates and she thinks about this entire movie. Basically, she thinks about her past, her entire life. And then she decides, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to Iran. I'm not going back. As much as I want to see my parents and everything, I know I made the right decision to stay where I am now. And she realized, you know, the strength she got from her parents, from her grandmother, those things stayed with her. The best parts of her life there are still with her, and she can go forward with that. And I think that's like a really great message.
It's, oh my God, it's so heavy.
Yeah.
Like, again, they did this. It was so beautifully done because the animation, where the funny parts were fucking hilarious. The dark parts were so goddamn dark. I think what they did really well with this was, because it's very dark, they added really good humor to it. Like, they added a lightness and the occasional part, like either the reaction of the characters or the story of the grandmother and her boobs.
Yeah. Or Eye of the Tiger montage, stuff like that.
Like, that was a really good, that was, okay. They went dark for the depression, like super dark. I had mentioned this earlier. Mm-hmm. Super, super, super dark. And then they popped up with the Eye of the Tiger. It was a great way to like turn the mood around and give you this like sense of victory for her. Like this feeling of like, oh my God, yes, you go girl. Like, just so excited for her. There's so much I could say about this movie. I think I like hit the talking points I wanted to hit, but there's so much I could say about this movie. I could talk about it like all fucking night. It just, I'm so glad we got to watch it.
Yeah, me too.
It is such a weird happenstance of everything that came to be of me finding this movie. And I'm, with all the shit that went on, I'm definitely grateful that I did do that. Like, I think I took a pretty shitty situation and like found the silver lining out of it.
Yeah, this is like immediately rocketed to my best of first time watches for this year. Like, it's so good. It's really so good.
Oh my God. It's definitely going to be tough to beat for sure.
Mm-hmm. Budget for this was $7.3 million and made $22.7 million box office worldwide, which is really good for an animated feature. Like, that's... And I doubt this had much advertising going on, so that's a return. That's a good return for that. And you know, it kept her working. So, you know, she went on to make some more stuff after this. So she obviously did well off this. You can find this everywhere: Blu-ray, DVD, iTunes, Google Play, Microsoft Store, Amazon Prime, Vudu, Movies Anywhere, and YouTube. So it's not.
And you can buy the graphic novel.
You can buy the graphic novel, which yes, do that. If you get the DVD versions, if you're, you know, if you're like, I can't handle like subtitles in foreign language. The DVD versions, Blu-ray versions do have the English audio, but I didn't see anywhere where like it was streaming with the English audio. It all seems to be French, and I think there's a couple other languages that it streams in, but yeah.
It was funny to watch. I was mentioning this to you, the whole translation between the French and the English, because mm-hmm. there's one point where they said, for the passports. Oh my God, that part with the passports. I just thought of that. Anyways, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So like Lady Lee has like a passing understanding of Canadian French, you know, but you know, actual French is like, there's definitely some significant differences between.
Like this, I definitely needed the subs, especially since I'm, it's been pretty long for me since I've really delved into fluently speaking French. So, right. It helped out, but there was occasional times where I caught up with the one point. So with the passports, he said 2 weeks on the screen, mm-hmm. but on the actual thing, it said a week and then something about like 3 days. Yeah. So it was a lot less. And there was something else. There's a couple of things that were mentioned where there was more to the sentence, like there was more being said, mm-hmm. and it just like ended the sentence. I can't remember directly, but there was the one with like the prostitute, the nuns were previously prostitutes before they became nuns. Yeah. There was something said to the girl that was like missed out in the translation. So nothing changed it. It's still pretty accurate. Like it's very well accurate to what it is. It's just some small things that if you're bilingual, you might catch on to. But in general, it was relative, like it was pretty good.
Yeah. A little bit of trivia here. So as to be expected, there was pushback from the, at the time, Iranian government.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they sent a letter to the French embassy in Tehran to protest against the movie and pressured the organizers of the 2007 Bangkok Film Festival to drop it from the lineup. And in Wellington, New Zealand, in July 2008, the Iranian embassy angrily protested the screening of Persepolis during the 37th Wellington Film Festival. In 2007, in Thailand, the film was dropped from the lineup of the... Oh, I already mentioned this. But two separate trivia points that are the same. But... the festival director from the Bangkok International Film Festival said, I was invited to the Iranian embassy to discuss the matter. We both came to the mutual agreement that it'd be beneficial to both countries if the film was not shown. And he said, it is a good movie in artistic terms, but we have to consider other issues that might arise here. Oh, like your religion being bullshit or yeah. Okay. It was shown in 2011 on the Tunisian private television station Nesma. A day later, a demonstration formed and marched on the station. The main Islamic party in Tunisia condemned the demonstration. Nabil Karori, the owner of Nesma TV, faced a trial in Tunis and on charges of violating sacred values and disturbing the public order. He was found guilty and ordered to pay a fine of 2,400 dinars, which is the equivalent to $1,700, a much more lenient punishment than predicted. Amnesty International said the criminal proceedings against Karari are an affront to freedom of expression. Despite such objections, the Iranian cultural authorities relented in February 2008 and allowed limited screenings of the film in Tehran, a bit with six scenes censored due to sexual content. All the sexual content in this movie, you know, the aftermath of a couple sex scenes, and yeah.
And it barely even, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's just to show you, like, the insanely stupid shit that this film is fighting, you know, that is, you know, in power in places.
Before I forget, if you ever get the chance to read the book, I Am Malala.
Yeah.
Read it, because this was, I want to say it's Pakistan, but it's similar idea. Mm-hmm. It talks about the parents that had like all the freedoms and how the daughter had to fight to get educated. Similar, like you'll see the similarities for sure. And I think you'd be really interested in that. But this is like a biography. So this is, I think she was 18 when she wrote this book, when she had this book come out, 18 or 19. If you get a chance, read it. That's also viewers, if you get the chance, read it as well.
If people want to like pair this with like a more genre specific movie, Under the Shadow from, I think it's, what year was it? I can't remember, but it's an Iranian horror movie. And it's set during the Iranian-Iraq war. And it's about a woman like basically trying to protect her daughter. And they live in this like apartment complex that a bomb has fallen into and not exploded, but they have nowhere else they can go. They still have to live around this fucking bomb. And at the same time, there's like hints that an actual genie or a djinn is like trying to steal her kid away from her. And the interesting thing is that the supernatural entity, whatever it is, it always sort of manifests itself as like a giant burqa, which is a just, you know, total like symbolic shit going on there. Enough about depressing oppression of women and all that bullshit. I don't know what we're doing next. We'll figure it out. Could be cool. Could be soon.
I was thinking, because you had mentioned Repulsion, where we just talked mm-hmm. about it. Like, that'd be an interesting one to do. Yeah. And also, I can't remember, because I have terrible memory, but I know we talked about doing Wounded Fawn as well.
Okay, yeah. We did talk about doing that, yeah. So we'll see what's going on. Other than that, Lady, you got anything you want to plug? I don't know.
You can find me here.
You can find her here. Yeah.
I'm here. While I get my life organized, I am here on this show. I am also on a beer review. Wow. I couldn't remember the name. I also do that.
BA101 on Maxwell Star's channel. Yeah.
With this gentleman as my co-host. I mean, my co-host as well, who is also a part of the show at times.
At times, yeah.
Whenever you... Okay. Oh, shit. I was forgetting to mention that. Sorry. Her thing about I hate people.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. All people are assholes. God damn it. Did I ever think of you? Like the face she made in everything. I was like, oh my God, that's Lee.
I don't know what you're talking about. I love people.
That was... Oh my... That was just identical to exactly like the tone of voice, the face. Like, that was perfectly you.
You get your spanking ass out of here.
I don't know what you're talking. You're slandering me now, and I just have to tell you this.
Shut up, bitch! Oh my God.
Yeah, that's
you what just that did is. A whole thing on like oppression of women.
I didn't support the oppression of women.
Now you are.
But
tell me to shut up, bitch.
Words of wisdom. Drop that zero and get with the hero.
That's all you need. That's all you need to do. You know,
if you want to be one of the gang, you've got to act like one of the gang. You don't want people to think you're a square, do you?
Yeah, right. And we know our listeners are not squares, and they'll go to tmbdos.podbean.com to find our other episodes, and go to our Facebook group. They Must Be Destroyed on Site on Facebook if they want to talk to us. And why wouldn't they want to talk to us? Because we're great.
We did have some comments in the chat.
I saw them, and I didn't know if they were like actually in relation to anything we were saying.
No, it wasn't. But we do have CB Fall, who said in very
interesting. Oh, he did.
Looking at you.
Oh, okay, CB Fall. So, nice to see you, dude.
I did want to mention that one. The other ones I was kind of ignoring.
Yeah, the Andrea Sino Belarus McEwen.
I feel like that's someone fucking with us from our group.
Maybe. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Either way,
it looks like it.
Just a bunch of stupid shit. But yeah, we're going to get the fuck out of here. Thanks for listening, guys. Thank you, Lady Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah. And until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. For further episodes of this podcast, please go to tmbdos.podbean.com. Thank you. Drive through.